back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Big appreciation, our friends at Cole Roofing, pouring that Royal Farms in our cup here. I've had some fried chicken lately and having some fun around here. My Planet Fitness folks are welcoming kids 14 to 19 free all summer long. So I want to make sure I get some plugs out for our sponsors. I've been waiting to have this guy on, and it's been a weird month. A lot of people are retiring, moving, passing, changing, all of that. This guy's been in my life as a mentor to me, starting back in 1986 at the Baltimore Sun, spent many, many years there as a columnist and then on to the Baltimore Ravens, and has since departed, and I need some wisdom. So we do have wise conversations around here. John Eisenberg joins us here. You can follow him at Be More Eisenberg, as well as writing books and books and more books. Imagine bringing you on 5 minutes after a 80-1 shot catches everybody at the Derby and looks like it had like electricity in it, huh?
Yeah, I had like five people text me when that, as soon as that race ended, said, "When are you writing the book?" I said, "No, it will not be me, but that's a book-worthy Derby." That was great, and horse racing needed it. Just a great story, just crazy story. I actually wrote a book called The Longest Shot. I said, this one's longer.
Well, no John, people think of you as football recently, right? If you've been on Ravens.com, they've read you there. If you're an old fart like me, I think of you with Joe Don Looney doing Enterprise takeouts on Sports 2 in 1987 or whatever. And, you know, I think of you writing columns off of Oriole games and Ravens and the Terps and covering big events back in the day when they would ship you off to an Olympics or something like that. And you would be columnist John doing your thing and like all that. But the horse racing side of this, I know you and I know how much you love it. And the storytelling part of it, that as a storyteller, you've always loved horse racing and you're a kid from Dallas that sort of flew into it, right?
Oh, I'm a kid from Texas. I grew up, it was illegal. Horse racing was illegal in Texas. So, they didn't have it. So you had to go to Oklahoma or Louisiana to do horse racing. So, I come up to Baltimore and I had not really been around it at all. And the Baltimore Sun sent me to the Derby in 1985. And it was just a great event to cover and to write. And they started sending me every year after that. I wasn't writing columns yet, but I started in 87 writing columns. And I went every year. I went every year for years. And the Preakness just covered a million of them. And so, yeah, that was part of it. I was not a guy that was at the track every day and all that. I definitely helicoptered in for the Triple Crown races, the Breeders' Cup and all that. But I just loved it. So many great stories and angles. And so I wound up writing books about it, too. It was just so much fun.
Did you find yourself at the track any other time between, let's say, if you went to Belmont because you did it, did you find yourself at the track between June 15th and April 1st at ever?
Very seldom. Very seldom. I was writing it. I mean, there came to a point where I was doing books on this stuff. So I was at racetracks for that reason. I mean, I was actually working it. I felt pretty hard, but I didn't just go to the track to bet.
But you had to learn everything about it, right? You didn't know how to read a form when they sent you to the first Derby in 85, right?
No, I knew a little bit, but not much. And
thank God for Dale Austin.
Dale Austin, I owe him such a tip of the cap because he really just took me by the neck and said, "All right, I'm going to teach you this." And
Marty McGee filled in anything missing, right?
Right, right. He said, "I'm going to teach you who's lying out here because they're all sort of lying." So it was just a great tutorial and some of my best days for sure.
All right, John Eisenberg, I'm going to hijack you here and take you in a different direction. And we'll talk about Adley Rutschman and the Ravens and Kyle Hamilton and all that stuff. Recently, I've started to write again. And I think you've known me since I was 17 years old. I'm 53 now. There have been points where I write for business, and there are points where I write for, I don't want to say pleasure, but write for to get it out. And I haven't written a whole lot since my wife got ill, right? Like, I mean, really writing. I was writing that Peter Principles book on the history of Angelos, which you, Litwin, Rosenthal, all those people, you know, Boswell had been a part of all of that back in the 90s with baseball. But I haven't written a lot. And I feel like I need to. I feel like it's my gift. I feel like it's a thing I do probably better than anything that I do. And I want to write. And if I were coming to Coach Eisenberg, Professor Eisenberg, Uncle John, and said in 2022, Nestor's going to write a column twice a week for a newspaper audience or a web audience, what would that be in the mind? I mean, you're the washed up columnist. The paper's kind of half gone now. Papers are gone forever. The way we interact with sports and box scores and our apps and our phones and in the gambling, for crying out loud. I mean, that's the future of all of it. But writing about people and stories and a columnist, what would a modern columnist, what would that be, John? What would that look like?
What do you mean? I mean, what would it be? I was lucky enough to sort of do it at the Ravens here in my last act, you know, in terms of paid media, local journalism. So, you know, you wake up and you come up with something original to say, which is much harder to do now because there's 9,000 voices out there. Everybody's got the megaphone. The biggest difference is now when I was writing columns in the Baltimore Sun 20 years ago, before social media, you know, you had the megaphone, that's for sure. And you shouted and people reacted to it. And now, especially on social media, and people link stuff to Twitter, it's all the same newsroom in many respects. And it's all coming out of the same newsroom. Everyone has a forum or something to say. And so there's just endless opinion. So you better come up with something original. That was something that concerned me when I was writing at the Ravens. You know, everybody's watching these games. Everybody's got an opinion about whether they should have drafted. So what are you going to say that's interesting and different? And then once you make that decision, convey it in an interesting manner. What are you going to say? Are you going to say it well? Do you have points to back it up? Or you just farting in the wind? Or, you know, what are you saying? And are you able to say it well? And so there's many challenges to it today by virtue of how the landscape has changed. And certainly people really that were in my role when I was at the Sun, which was a general sports columnist, that doesn't really exist anymore. You just float from baseball. I mean, maybe there's a few dinosaurs left, but you float from baseball to football to Terps to the Masters, whatever it may be, the Derby. I think it's gone. So it's
well, that's what I mean about that part of it. That part of it where guys like you filled the whole calendar. And if Coppin was doing well, you go over and hang out with Fang. And if lacrosse was happening, you go do it. And if Hunt Cup was going on last weekend, you do it. If Adley Rutschman's coming to town next week, you're going to go do that. And if the Caps were on fire, you go down and cover a game. You know, like all of that was what we were born into. And I don't know what the Orioles are next week with Adley Rutschman or how wide of an audience they take on. This race is amazing, right? This is the best time of the year. I mean, the NFL schedule's coming out. Lacrosse is happening. I mean, all the golfs, all the tennises, all that's in order. This would be the time of the year where you really can move place to place where, no offense, John, no offense to your Ravens writing and all that, but you weren't a columnist with the Ravens. You just wrote a Ravens thing. You know, to me, a columnist is much more broad than just I'm going to write baseball or just write football or even just saying I'm writing sports or just professional sports. You did so many things, and I miss that part of having you or someone like you writing about a multitude of things around the clock. And I think everybody has become laser focused on whatever. It's kind of like kids when they're 14. If you're a soccer kid, you play soccer all year, you know, and that's something that has certainly changed generationally in this century for sports fans, because I don't know that anybody's that broad anymore. I think everybody's become more narrow in to some degree.
No question about it. And how long do you have? I mean, we're talking about the real fundamental changes in journalism and the impact of corporate journalism, and what has happened to a lot of these entities, and certainly the newspaper business, and the shrinking of things. And you know, the newsroom when I was at the Baltimore Sun, there was 40 people in the sports department. Now there's like 10. So they it just doesn't happen anymore. And so I, you know, do I think it's unfortunate? Yes, I do. And I love the day. I mean, you're going back to days. I mean, what was that? What are the, I don't know what they call the, that old stadium in San Diego, the one that that they couldn't get a new one built. So the Chargers left town. But it was at one point Jack Murphy Stadium, named after a sports writer, for crying out loud. I mean, you know,
that always made it my favorite stadium, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, those days are over. You know, you're so intrinsic to a city. And a sports like Sid Hartman in Minnesota, you know, and these are guys, I will say, I'm not that old. I mean, you know, Jack Murphy's long dead and Sid Hartman lived till he was 100. And I did know those guys. And that's when, you know, John Steadman in Baltimore, you know, a person was linked to the city of the sports writer. And, you know, you were. It was real interesting if you were in that role. And by the time I came along, it was a little different. And there was five or six of us sort of sharing it. You know, I did. I mean, the general sports column was a great thing. I loved it. I knew a million guys in my generation that did a beautiful job with it. And I think it's RIP, but it's too bad.
You think it's RIP? Okay, fair enough, John.
Well, of course it is. How many? I mean, there's a few left. You can see the Washington Post. Has a couple guys that that go from place to place, and there's a few around. Bill Plaschke still doing it in Los Angeles, and you'll still find guys that are out there. I'm not saying it's not happening anymore, but because there are some guys out there, but it's certainly not prevalent in a lot of markets.
Well, I've talked to John Feinstein, you, and I'm going to seek out every living columnist. I can't find John, but I may go read some of his work and just how it pertains to 2022 as a 53-year-old who wants to write and be read. And I think I'm a good enough writer to read. You know, what are you shouting? And the shout and react. I've been doing that on the radio, but I still think there's a spot for people to want to wake up and read something or go to bed and read something and have it be insightful, which brings me to this. Access. Press conferences, what players and coaches say, and that part of it, that's the part that's really breaking down here, John, for me, right? Like, these press conferences have become awful. They've become these staged where the reporters already pretty much know the questions they're going to ask. They mix an independent guy in with me, with one of their coworkers. I mean, no offense to Ryan Mink or Garrett Downing. They work at the pleasure of John Harbaugh. And at the end of the day, asking questions in a press conference, it's almost like having the employees ask questions. And I'm weirded out by all of it, but I'm more weirded out about the access part of this and seeing what's happened with European soccer, that the days of asking questions and writing these pieces that can only come from the Q&A. As Feinstein said, you cut my arm off if you don't give me a chance to talk to the coach after the game. You don't really have a chance to do something original, as you would say. That's all going away. I mean, I have no pretension that the days of me and Gene Ubriaco and Barry Trotz hanging out with a notebook and really talking about stuff that's going on, that the corporate part of this with sports has changed it forever. I think that that part of it needs to be overcome in some way in order to be read, because you would have quotes from the coach and all involved in that. I don't know that we're going to have that kind of access anymore to ask real questions of what really happened in the game. I think those days are gone.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think they are gone. And yeah, I mean, it's just the world we live in and the landscape has changed. You know, and a lot of these players, you know, Rashad Bateman came to the Ravens with a YouTube channel. And that, I mean, it's changing that generation of player. And I'm not picking on Rashad, but that generation of player, they sort of and it's a good channel. They're pretty good at it. You know, it's his story. He wants to control his story. He'll still talk to the press. He'll do it all. But the teams, I'll tell you, the teams are going to have a hard time controlling this to some degree, because the players want to control their own story. And they are controlling their own story, and social media gives them the ability to do that, and it's powerful. And the fans don't care, and so they actually like it. I mean, they get inside access. So accountability, it's great, and a lot of it is really good stuff. But in terms of accountability, it changes things, because what's lacking from this is the hard question: why did you throw that interception? Why did you miss that block? You know, why did you just, you know, make a decision that didn't work out? It's over. So it's much harder to get that now. And I agree totally. I think the genie's out of the bottle. And especially COVID gave everybody the excuse just to close the locker room. Locker room's closed. Very hard to get in there now. I haven't been around the Orioles in a while, but I don't think anyone's going into the clubhouse. So that's where it all happened for years and years. Sitting around waiting for Rafael Palmeiro to show up, and you know, he'd read your column and didn't like what you wrote, and you know, you
chased him with a bat. Did he ever chase you with a bat? He did me.
He didn't chase me with a bat. We had a lot of. He was a reader, and I liked Rafi. He didn't like some of the stuff I wrote, but we talked endlessly about it, and that was great.
I didn't dislike him. I found him to be a tremendously thin-skinned human being.
Yeah, he was a reader. That's what was great. He read what was in the paper, and he had an opinion about it.
I don't read the papers. Yes, you do.
Oh no, he definitely did. And so that's over. You know, you can't have that sort of interaction anymore. Do I think that's sad? Very.
Well, the really sad part is I can write whatever I want if I don't ever have to walk up to Lamar Jackson, right? Like literally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I sort of did that. It's closed and you can go to the press conference and stand there. And that certainly is the first law. If you write something critical, you better show up. That's fine. But for a while, they were just showing up on Zoom, which is a whole different thing. But yeah, that's the best you can do now is come to some press conference and stand there.
John Eisenberg, he did it better than anybody for the longest time. Leaving the Ravens and leavingravens.com for you, books now exclusively?
Yep, books exclusively. I'm right in the middle of a project right now, the one on the history of black quarterbacks in the NFL. And I've been doing some interviews. This week, I'm going to go talk to T. Martin, who's a Ravens coach who followed Peyton Manning at Tennessee and won a national title at Tennessee and then had just a cup of coffee in the NFL.
I saw one game at Neyland Stadium, and the great T. Martin was the quarterback that day against Georgia.
He's got a great story, so I'm very interested to talk to him. And there's a lot of guys that have some laments, you know, it's very interesting anyway. So yeah, but that's keeping me busy. I mean, I'm still chained to I'm sort of on a deadline for that book. So it won't be out till 2023, but, it enables me to keep my feet still in it. That was sort of the idea. That's really is enough. This is a big canvas and I got a lot of work to do on it. And so that's what I'm doing.
You got Adley Rutschman fever yet, buddy?
A little bit. I'm ready. I'm ready for him to get here. Yes, I am. As a matter of fact, you know, very anxious. He's 24. You know what? He's 24 years old. He needs to be here. It is time for him to be here. And I know they've been very cautious with him. And I understand that. And they've been very methodical in terms of development. And then the injury slowed him down. He would have been here by now, I think. But it is time, you know. I'm very curious to see. And I think it would be shocking to me if he's not. He's going to be good. I mean, give him a while. He's going to have some bumps and bruises. But that's just makes the batting order. I think it's now, it would be six deep now in decent players. So it'll be interesting to watch.
John, I had to laugh because I looked his stats up. I had Luke on earlier. We were talking about this imminent appearance next week and how the Orioles are going to screw it up or orchestrate it or try to sell tickets or do whatever they're going to do. Last time it was, McPhail showing up and saying, you know, he's coming up Friday, buy your tickets or whatever. That was two generations ago now for players, Matt Wieters going back 2009. But I looked at his stats. He had 500 at Aberdeen, 400 at Bowie, 300 at Norfolk. I'm like, he's at least 265 in the big leagues. Let's bring him up.
Well, that's higher than Wieters.
Oh, come on now. You know, I did go through that whole generations of players like with Markakis and Jones and Wieters and how it all happened that they could have won a World Series very easily, right? Oh, they could
very
have.
Definitely. Very definitely. Wieters, don't get me wrong. Throw away sarcastic line there. He was good. He maybe wasn't a 300 hitter, you know, fantastic. Very good catcher, what, four-time All-Star, great defensively. They missed him when he was gone. Have they ever really replaced him? No. So, he was good. Hardy, Markakis, Adam Jones. There's a reason why the Orioles were pretty good there for a few years with Buck. Those were talented teams.
Yeah, Eisenberg goes back to Jeff Tackett and, Terry Kennedy and Bob Melvin, Bomell, all that stuff back in the 80s. John, I'll plug your Oriole book for anybody out there that wants some confessionals from the Orioles old days, but still writing books on horse racing, the history of football, the streaks in sports and Cal Ripken and Lou Gehrig. Make sure you're checking out John's work. Miss you, dude. And we don't have any more press conferences, and this is the only way we're going to get together unless you come have a crab cake with me one day, man.
Well, golly, that's a good offer. So
there you go. What I do for old friends. Follow John Eisenberg. I know you will be. Be more Eisenberg. I'll make sure I keep in the Towson area to keep you local, to have you driving out. John Eisenberg can still be found out on Twitter. Buy his books. He's no longer at Ravens.com, so I'm going to bug him once or twice a month, and we'll have him on here talking some Ravens. Good having you on, John.
Thanks. I enjoyed it.
Appreciate you, man. John Eisenberg giving me columnist advice free of charge. It's like having a built-in professor right in the family. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.